Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/NSS. And by Upside, the smart new way to save big money on business travel. Visit Upside.com and enter the code NSS to be guaranteed at least a $100 gift card when you book your first trip. And by WordPress. WordPress powers 27% of all the websites. Get 15% off your new website at WordPress.com/NSS. That's WordPress.com/NSS.
An autonomous delivery robot, Star Trek in virtual reality, and a tricorder in real life. Live from the Twit Eastside Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's New Screensavers.
Screensavers. Hello, everybody. Episode 107 for June 3rd, 2017. Leo Laporte, Nathan Olaverschild. Did I get it?
I mean, I feel like you're pronouncing it even better because of that fly shirt.
Oh, look at this. It is so awesome.
Which was made in Mexico.
San Miguel de Allende.
That's pretty cool.
And my good friend Winton Churchill. Not Winston. Winton. Sends this up. Sends me new shirts all the time, which is nice.
I like that one.
How you doing?
I'm good.
I am so jealous.
What?
I came in here the other day, and you were commanding the Starship Enterprise.
Oh, it was so much fun. We got an early look at Star Trek Bridge for PlayStation VR. It's also on some other VR systems. And it was a blast. Luckily, I was playing with friends, people I knew, and that made it even more fun.
You were, what was your role?
I was the captain.
You were the captain?
I was the captain.
Of the Aegis, we should
say.
Of
the Aegis, but we were unable to unlock the Enterprise with our gameplay. We can talk more about that later in the show, but it is a blast.
You can unlock the Enterprise if you're good enough.
Yeah.
You have to earn it.
It's the J.J. Abrams Enterprise, though.
Right.
This is the old school TV Enterprise. It's
but weirdly enough, they have the Kobayashi Maru scenario.
It is in there.
Which is from the original.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it. We'll play the game in just a little bit and talk to developers from Ubisoft who created it. We also have a robot, a real robot, a robot that does a job.
Yeah. You could say it's R2-D2's grandfather almost.
Well, that's good because I have left over from when you guys have played the game. You left the plans for the... Oh, that's a different movie.
Battlestar. Star Wars.
That's a different Star Trek. I'm sorry. Yeah. I confuse those, you know. Georgia Dow's going to show you how to teach your kids to make some money so you can retire by coding. That's my plan. And the NES Classic. You can make it one out of... You couldn't buy it anymore. They've discontinued it, and it was hard to get in the first place.
But if you got a Raspberry Pi, you can make your own.
It's all you need.
Yep.
Big story. Now, You worked on Tech News Today a little bit today.
Days last week.
So you've been following the news.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me about this one login. This is a password manager used mostly in enterprise.
Yeah, it's not popular with consumers the way that
LastPass,
Dashlane. Yeah, Dashlane's real big with consumers.
Yeah.
And we've recommended over and over again that people do consider using a password manager. And it is really, more often than not, a more secure way to go.
But there is a flaw with password managers, which is it's a single point of failure. You trust the password manager.
Exactly.
You put everything in there. And, man, if a bad guy could get your password vault...
And that's basically what happened with 1Login.
You're kidding!
Yeah.
So, normally, we talk a lot on the Security Now about a technique called salting and hashing, or hashing and salting, which is, instead of keeping a password database stored in the clear in a way that could be hacked, even if somebody gets a good, like LastPass does this, 1Password does it, Dashlane does it, even if somebody gets the password vault, it's encrypted, the keys are hashed, which means they're not in the clear, and they're salted, which means you can't reverse hash them.
Yeah.
Apparently, whatever this breach was, the company acknowledged that hackers got into its data center
and they decrypted their encryption methods.
They got access to database tables.
Ultimate nightmare scenario.
With it contained information about users, apps, and keys. And they admitted one login said, yeah, they were able to decrypt passwords.
And this was mostly in the U.S. So for those outside of the U.S., customers outside the U.S., they weren't affected as much. This was largely happening in the U.S.
All right, that's as bad as it can get. I don't know what the story is. Clearly, if you run a password manager, you know hackers are going to be not only attacking you, but you have a higher responsibility to protect your users.
Yeah. It's not a good look because this is the promise, and to fail on this is a failure of the entire premise of the product. So, you got to give them some props for being transparent and hitting it head on and letting people know what was going on. But at the same time, it does raise questions over whether or not people should stick with that product. Now, one of the things they could do is maybe be a little bit more open about what their encryption technology is and show how they're going to make right on this going forward.
Well, one thing that is to their credit, they did tell people right away.
Yes, they were quick with it.
Yeah. Now, a big story that I think was a little undercovered, maybe because it was so complicated, but the Supreme Court came back with a landmark decision this week. Have you ever refilled inkjet cartridges? Have you ever done that?
I have not.
You're
but
smart because it's a mess.
It's a pain.
You could take a cartridge. You have to use a syringe, fill it with ink, and you inject it into the cartridge. A lot of people do that because they're cheap. It's not. I've always said don't do that because you really want to replace the cartridge. You want to replace, in many cases, in an inkjet that replaces the heads as well. Yeah. It's an important kind of maintenance step. And I understand why people do it because they practically give away the printer. They make all the money in the ink.
Yep.
So people were doing this with Lexmark printers. They were refilling the cartridges. In fact, there was a company called Impression Products in West Virginia.
And they based their entire business around it.
They
the cartridges, they refilled them, and they sold them for far less because, as you mentioned, Lexmark, Canon, a lot of other printer companies
were charging
exorbitant prices for these printer cartridges because that's where they make the money.
Lexmark sued. They said, we have a patent on those cartridges. You're violating our patent.
Mm-hmm.
The case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and this week the Supreme Court came back, I think, a wonderful decision, a very powerful decision. Judge Roberts wrote the decision extending patent rights beyond first sale would clog the channels of commerce with little benefit from the extra control the patentees retained. In other words, he said, when you sell your product, you give up patent rights. And this applies U.S. and overseas.
Mm-hmm.
It is a huge decision. Pharmaceuticals. A lot of manufacturers.
Auto parts, computer parts. Basically, at stake here was the question of the right to repair. If you buy a product from any company, do you have the right to fix that yourself, whether it's with aftermarket parts or if it's from parts from that original manufacturer?
Medical device companies, all these the companies in favor that filed briefs in favor were Google, oddly enough, and Intel. Apple didn't file an amicus brief, but if they did, they would be on the side in favor of patent rights because this is that whole right to repair saga, which is going on right now.
Yeah.
Many legislatures, I think 12 states now across the country, have legislation that said consumers should have the right to repair a product that they bought. And Apple says no. So does John Deere.
Yeah,
so do
yeah.
other companies. Apple says, no, and we're not going to sell the parts. We're not going to put the manuals out. We fix it. No one else does.
It's an especially interesting question because, not that long ago, you bought a PC tower. The expectation was that you would upgrade it yourself. You would fix it yourself. Nowadays, when we're going out, whether it's we're buying a car and you open up the hood
it's
covered in plastic,
buy
a phone, there's no screws to turn to take that thing apart. Now, oftentimes, what companies like Apple or Nintendo or John Deere say is if you do repair this on your own, you're voiding our warranty, and you're on your own. But they're not actively standing in your way. The difference with Lexmark here was they were actually trying to shut down a company that was selling aftermarket parts. And that's a whole other line.
We do know, though, that Apple's gone to state legislatures and really tried to lobby them against passing any such bill. This decision is going to change the landscape. And I think for consumers, this is a very, very good decision. It was a unanimous decision. One dissenting vote from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, only because she said it should be U.S. but not overseas.
Yes.
But otherwise, 8-0.
Yeah.
This is huge. I'm so thrilled with this.
And given how small of a company this was going up against Lexmark, you got to say it's a win for the little guys here. You really do.
It is a total victory, and you know, and it's the right answer. One more story, and then we're going to get to. We have such a good show. I want to get right to it, but there is one more story, which at first I thought hell froze over. I thought, oh, hell froze over. It's frozen. It's frozen. Do you have that expression in Ireland? When hell you probably invented it. Hell has frozen over. Google says we're going to put an ad blocker in our browser, Google Chrome. What? Google's an ad company. Then I realized, oh. They're going to block everybody else's ads.
Yep.
So Google is a member of a group that wants advertising. Well, we all know advertising is out of control, right? There is a scroll down a little bit, because the Coalition for Better Ads is a kind of a lobbying group. Washington Post, go back, you're going too far.
Thomas Reuters, Google,
Interactive Advertiser,
Unilever,
Bureau,
Procter & Gamble,
Facebook, and Google are all members of this Coalition for Better Ads. Because let's face it, ads make the mobile web unusable. They block the page. There are security problems.
They make the desktop web unusable too.
Slows it down. It makes the pages, bloats them up by 3 or 4 times. A lot of people use ad blockers. Mm-hmm. So Google says we're going to put an ad blocker in. And I thought, oh my God, this is. But then I realized, whose ads are acceptable? Well, Google's ads. Yeah. Google's ads are acceptable. It won't block them.
Well, the difference here really is Google is reportedly saying, this isn't something Google has come out and officially said they are doing yet, but there are...
No, they have.
They have.
Yes, okay. It's official.
So here's the distinction. If it's a pop-up video ad, if it's a pop-up box, if it's autoplay video, if it's those, you know, those big ads that like collapse over the page and block the content you're trying to see, those are what would be considered annoying ads versus just a right rail kind of animated ad or something like that, which is what Google serves. So now there are some websites that have made autoplay
video. You don't
video.
Work for Google, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay, just check.
There are some websites that have made autoplay videos and things
I
like
agree.
That.
There are horrible the backbone. Ads.
Well, they're horrible.
Takeovers.
But, yeah.
But I have to say, this is only good for Google because... If you want an ad that Chrome will allow through,
yeah,
you go to Google.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that, for me, is problematic with this is Google and Facebook sell more of the ads on the internet than almost anybody else out there, right? And they are the ones who are basically coming up with the standards and the tastes as to what's acceptable or not. Now, I happen to agree with him that most of these video ads are annoying, most of these autoplay ads are annoying, but you look at some news organizations which do important journalism and that I'm a fan of, I'm not going to name
that's
names.
That's how they subsidize ourselves with ads.
Yeah, but they're not annoying ads like right. You'll see on...
Well, some
on
people think you know. They are. You got to admit,
but wait, should Google be the one to make this call?
There are some people who say all ads are annoying. I don't want to see any ads. Well, a lot of ad blocker users.
Yeah.
It's not about... In fact, that's one reason AdBlock Plus kind of got a little bit... Because they had that acceptable ad policy.
Yeah, yeah.
And most people run ad blockers. You tell me. You at home. You run an ad blocker because you want to see any ads, right? You probably skip through our ads, right?
Yeah.
So there is that group. I think Google's probably doing a rear action because what they're trying to do is say, well, please don't give up on the web. Don't use a full ad blocker. Use our ad blocker. Mm-hmm. But James Grimmelman, who is a Cornell law professor, pointed out Google has more than 50% market share.
Yep.
This raises, I think, some serious antitrust concerns. And I have to also wonder if Google didn't wait until the new administration, a new Congress... A government that really doesn't really believe in antitrust action and said, now, quick, do the ad blocker. Because if you are Google, there's no question, Chrome is the dominant browser.
Oh, yeah, far and away.
Chrome's market share is going like this. Firefox going down.
Yeah.
Safari's flat. Internet Explorer going down. More than 50% market share. Now, that's not quite a monopoly yet.
But you have to
wonder if they're using their dominant market position to favor their business, which is ads.
Well, I mean, in this move... Because they are the dominant player on all those levels, it's hard to fight against that and it's hard to argue with that. So they are using their power and influence to get this across. And if they put these things out there, now luckily it sounds like they are working with publishers in advance so that folks won't be necessarily caught off guard.
Yeah, you know how they're working with them?
It would be a shame if your ads was to be blocked by our browser.
It's a
for a small fee, buy ads from us.
It's a strong arm tactic.
In other words, hell did not freeze over. Google acted in its own interest. All right. That's the top stories of the week. But we have some fun stuff. We're going to send you down to meet a robot. We're going to play some Star Trek. We're going to have a lot of fun.
It's a good show.
But let me do an ad. And if you block this, I'm going to kill you. So we've got a new podcast system where everybody's ads are blocked except ours. That would be good. I'd buy that technology.
A very googly move.
It's good enough for Google. No, you know what? I have nothing against ads. I just don't want ads to weigh the web down so much they're unusable.
Yeah.
And I want an ecosystem that has more than one ad seller in it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. I know what you want. When you go out and get a home loan, you want to get a loan from not Joe's shady bank down the corner, from a responsible, big, reliable mortgage lender. You got one, Quicken Loans. It is, I think, number two right after that big bank that nobody should work with ever again because they're terrible. That's who, by the way, did my last loan 3 years ago. It took 2 months to get a loan. I asked Lisa. I said, it was a month, right? She said, no. We went on vacation. We came back from vacation. It took 2 months to buy our last house. Now you can do it in 2 minutes. Go to Rocket Mortgage. It's quickenloans.com/NSS. Rocket Mortgage, designed by the best lender in the country for people like us, for geeks who don't want to go meet a mortgage lender. We don't want to go through all of our paperwork in the attic. We just want to get a loan, right? Rocket Mortgage has pre-negotiated deals with all the major financial institutions. So all you have to do is say, yes, you can get my bank statement. Yes, you can get my pay stubs. You don't have to go through any paperwork. You could do it all on your phone. You pick the term and the rate you like. They will, in minutes, approve you for a loan or a refi. In fact, this is a good time to refinance. Interest rates are going up. Skip the bank. Skip the waiting. Go completely online. QuickenLoans.com/NSS. That's Rocket Mortgage. They're an equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. We thank them for their support. And I thank you for watching that ad. Please don't block our ads. Please. I beg of you. So you actually got to go down and see this.
I feel like I got to do all the fun stuff for this episode.
You did.
I got to go down to San Jose to Savvy Oaks headquarters. They're a robot maker, and they're doing some really special stuff. And I got to see one of their relay robots in action at an Aloft Hotel, their Silicon Valley location in Newark, California. And I was amazed by how much the staff loved this thing. And I even spoke with the fellow who runs that specific location, asked him what would happen if we took it away, and he said he'd be devastated.
Let's take a look.
Thank you for calling the front desk. This is Alexis. How may I assist you?
Hey, Alexis. This is Nathan in room 442. Can I get an iced coffee and a can of Pringles?
Sure. I will have that delivered to you right away.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Right now, a robot is working with a human being to fulfill my order. We're at the Aloft Silicon Valley Hotel, which is one of the first hotels to deploy a robot butler. That robot will be able to get on an elevator and make its way to my room, even dodging obstacles along the way, all by itself. Hello?
Hello. Your delivery has arrived. Butler is waiting outside your door for you to pick it up.
All right. Looks like I got my items exactly what I wanted. That robot's name is Butler, and there are actually a handful of these robots deployed in hotels across the country. It's a relay robot built by a company called Savvyoak here in Silicon Valley. Let's go take a look at their headquarters.
So when we started Savvyoak, we asked the question of what's the MVP that we could build in robotics. And delivery is sort of the lowest hanging fruit in the space of robotics, you know, moving things from one person to another inside of a building. And so we looked at all the different places where delivery would be useful. And we found that there are many, many possible places where this could be helpful. And hotels were one of the obvious markets.
So right now, about how many relays are deployed? And are they just in hotels or are they in other places as well?
We are actually in many properties right now. We have over 50 signed contracts. About half of those have already been installed and are in service. Most of those are hotels, but we're also looking at other industries as well. We just announced a partnership with FedEx, actually, and they have 7 of our robots, and they're doing deliveries inside of a repair center. And so Relay is being used in many, many different kinds of applications to move things around.
So help me place Savioke in the broader context of robotics and what things look like. Is there kind of a wave of other companies that you all are part of, or do you feel a little bit lonely sometimes as though only a handful of folks are doing this? Or what is that kind of broader scene for companies who are competing against you or complementary?
So I think there's a growing number of robotics companies right now, and that's great because, this year is really going to be the year of the robot. But I do know that when we started, the space was a lot less full of other robotics companies. There were robotics for the home, such as Roomba, vacuum cleaners, and there were robotics for industry, big industrial robot arms that build cars. And there wasn't much in between, which we thought was the sweet spot. And so right in the middle is where you get the robots for structured environments, semi-structured environments, like hotels or like hospitals, where it's more structured than a home. It's less messy and it's kept clean and neat. But it's less structured than a factory or a warehouse where everything's very rigidly controlled.
Lau and her team envision a future where robots assist humans for specific tasks and largely do jobs that can help make us more efficient, rather than simply replacing us in the workforce. Back at the Aloft location in Newark, California, their relay robot has proven indispensable.
He's just not a novelty. He's actually helpful to the hotel. Butler allows us to take that 15-minute time standard that was standard in all hotels, bring that down to 2.5 minutes, and let us communicate with our guests in a much more timelier manner.
Maybe it's because we're in Silicon Valley, but we notice that people don't seem to find it all that surprising that a robot is cruising around Aloft's hallways alone and on its own. Our ability to find these robots so friendly is no mistake.
We want to make sure that Relay was never perceived as something that would cause anxiety or creepiness for the people that are around it. And one of the things that we discovered early on in our design research is that if a robot can communicate as well as we can, at least to some degree, then you evaporate a lot of that concern. So Relay has a speech bubble where he's always disclosing what he's up to. And actually, when he's idle, he says who he is, how he can help. And when he's on a task, he says that he's on a delivery. Just that speech bubble saying those few words demystifies what's going on with our robot. And then having the eyes on the robot is to add a layer of empathy, because we rely on humans to complete our tasks. So when he's getting into an elevator, we hope that people see this cute robot and want to step aside to let him in, because it's really up to everybody to make this thing work out.
So we are still kind of really in the early days of robotics as a whole, right? Even though corporations, manufacturing facilities, they've been using for a long time. Mm-hmm. Where this is all going, there's obviously different ideas, like the Rosie idea and the Terminator idea. What do you say to people when they ask you, like, is this the beginning of the robot apocalypse? Or are you going to, ruin the planet and take all the jobs, or that kind of doomsday scenario?
As long as good people are creating helpful tools to make people's lives better, that's the position we've got. We want to improve people's lives with the products we make, especially with the robots we make. Anything can happen, but we're confident that what you see coming out today is an indicator of where we're going. And it's a lot of robots that are assistive devices to extend the capabilities of people. So we firmly believe by setting a good precedent and by seeing what the community is up to, we fundamentally think that things are going to work out to our benefit in the future. It will mix things up, but we like to think in a really great way.
Adrian is here. He's joined us. And is the robot here, too?
The robot is here.
Can we meet?
Yeah.
Robot? Now, is his name Relay or?
His name's Relay.
Yeah.
That's like his default name.
Oh,
here he comes.
He's coming. Oh, my gosh.
So he's running totally on his own, fully autonomously.
This is autonomous. There's Colleen. Yep. Now, if Colleen gets in the way, he stops or he goes around.
He actually slows down. and goes around. He's always dynamically planning.
So he'll never run over somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. He really cares about
people. There's a ramp here. Is he going to be okay? Oh, look at that.
Yeah, he loves ramps.
There's wires.
Yeah, he's got that.
Oh my gosh. Here he comes. He says, right. And by the way, the screen says I'm running a delivery.
Yep.
So that if somebody like Colleen walks into him, she'll know that he's on his way. And we set this up ahead of time that this would be the
spot where
and
he was.
So he just came back here.
Yeah, he just made it back.
How does he know where here is?
So when we first got in, or when I first got in, made a map of the whole office.
So you let him wander around, or do you have to do that?
Actually, when he doesn't know where he is, you have to drive him with a joystick.
Okay.
So just as the first step. Actually, they just put up a map that I shared with them.
This is our office?
This is your office, fully in high resolution.
Oh, look, snacks.
You see everything there.
It says, hello. Yeah. Please remove your items.
Yeah, help yourself.
Oh, have some sun chips.
We should probably give some of these to the audience here.
Yeah.
Since we got so many.
We got a lot. And then all set, I press the button. So this was, if in the hotel, this would be the experience of the guest.
Yeah.
You good?
And then how was your stay? Oh, I'm having a great time at the loft.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a little happy dance.
Oh, look. Cute. Oh, my God. Do guests love this?
Yeah, they do.
Anybody intimidated by it?
We worked really hard to try to defeat that whole sentiment of intimidation and really trying to make Relay feel almost familiar, almost pet-like. And so all the design is super intentional
really
and the interactions on screen.
Who didn't get a snack? Anybody? Oh, you should have a snack. You look like a hungry kid.
Yeah, and you can fit a lot of snacks in there.
Just take them all. And then
How deep is that container inside?
It's about 14 inches deep.
Okay, pretty solid.
And you can fit, like... grocery bags in there and
does he
send
have
them
some
off.
More?
No. Yeah, and there's actually this little.
Oh, there is more.
Yeah, there's t-shirts, all kinds
of
stuff.
Holy cow!
Yeah.
Wow, there's even some Hot Wheels in here. Okay. And some stickers. Yeah. So that is cool. So I'm going to say all set. Go ahead and put that.
All right.
So is it, it's not food you're delivering, it's usually dry goods or?
We can deliver anything.
Okay.
So we deliver like Starbucks coffee, food.
Really?
And bags and stuff. Yeah, and so we have properties that are. Doing a lot of cool work, sending all kinds of stuff, even like balloons. So when the lid opens up, they pop out.
No.
And actually, we've had a couple of robots even deliver a wedding ring as part of a ceremony.
Oh, my God.
And that was pretty cool.
That's really neat.
Yeah.
So was this Savioke's first product? Did you have other things in mind at first? Or?
Yeah. Well, our team started at Willow Garage, which was this robotics research lab where we looked for years where robots fit in society. And that wound down, and seven of us kicked off Savioke. And so we really focused on peer-to-peer delivery and starting with Relay. But we have plans for adding some cool products in the future.
Now, there's LiDAR in here, right?
Yes.
That's how it maps.
Yeah. You can't have a robot
without
lasers.
Yeah, take us through lasers. Top to bottom. Like, what exactly?
Oh,
he's taking off. He's going.
He decided to take off. He's a little shy.
He rerouted.
Yeah.
Now, those wires are going to kill him.
He's not going to like that wire.
Yeah, he's going to get stuck on that one probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a touch screen up top that always communicates what Relay is up to, what he's doing.
Yeah.
And then there's, what else is there in there?
So at the bottom, we have an active bumper because safety is super important for the robot.
Right. He's, by the way, doing a great job. I don't know why. My staff has been throwing obstacles at him.
Yeah.
He's just going. He just really does
he's
a great job.
Super persistent.
Going back to his charging pad.
Yeah. Here you can see him. So he just planned back to his dock. He's going to look at the dock. And look at it in 3D because he has two 3D depth cameras.
And that's the strip along the bottom. That's where the cameras are?
My Roomba never does this.
And then he's going to do a little touch here, and then he's charging.
My Roomba drives me crazy. It stops before it gets to the dock, and then it dies.
It's like, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that
we
was
try
nice.
To avoid that whenever
Nicely
possible.
Nicely executed, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's got to be. I mean, you said it was like it's like building a car. It's an expensive device. Do you sell these? How does this work?
We rent them. We rent them for about $2,000 a month, depending on the contract.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's less than a bellboy, right?
We really want this robot to get out into the world and start helping people now because we're ready. We feel like there's a lot of opportunity out there. And so this really is the time.
What's next?
Really just we're looking across domain now. So we started in hospitality, which was really hard because you have to design robots that are safe around kids, older adults, elevators, and just really dynamic environments.
Are elevators hard? How does it get the elevator to go up?
So elevators have a controller, and then we also make our own controller that ties into it. And that basically enables Relay to have roughly the same capability as a person does inside the elevator car. So when he gets in the elevator, you just see, like, the floor light just come on. And that's him wirelessly pushing the button. It's really cool.
So you've got hospitality with the hotels. You're doing logistics with FedEx.
Yeah.
How does that work? Is it a delivery robot?
It's awesome. Yeah, it's the same use case, essentially, without the star rating on it.
It doesn't go down the street, though.
No. Actually, FedEx offers all these really amazing services, and one of them is actually doing equipment repair.
Oh.
You'd never expect it, but it's a really diversified and amazing company. So we have a whole fleet of robots that are serving repair technicians. And actually, this video is an example. This isn't FedEx, but we shot
like
a video just
parts.
To show you what's really going on. So as a repair technician is fixing a screen on a broken laptop, Relay shows up right at the moment that they need to swap out the part.
Now, it seems like there could be huge opportunities in education, in healthcare, in elder care, just all sorts of spots where something like this could be useful. Are you all exploring those sorts of possibilities too?
Yeah. Like, as an example, in healthcare, we know that, like, medium, large hospitals transport over 10,000 items every day.
Yeah.
And that requires a lot of effort, and it requires healthcare workers to move away from patient care to dealing with logistics. We can fix that problem with our robot.
Now, this isn't my question, but I know the people at home are wondering, does anybody ever, like, kick the robot or knock it over? I mean, I think that it's, like, I would worry about it getting vandalized.
Yeah, we worry a lot. We, especially in the beginning, we worried a lot about that because we just didn't know how people would react to the robot.
Yeah.
It turns out that it's actually been amazing. We've completed over 100,000 fully autonomous deliveries, and we've had, very early on, some minor incidents. Mm-hmm. One time, somebody did knock over the robot and steal an ice cream sandwich out of it.
Oh, man,
this was
that's cold.
Fully 3D printed.
So mean.
Oh, it was so mean. And it was a prototype, so it was hand-built. It takes us like
It took us
a month and a half to build that robot.
Oh.
But, yeah, it was in our initial trial. But we got it back up and running the next day, and everything was just fine.
It's interesting, because initially I would think, and maybe in the old days there were a backlash against robots, like, oh, we, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I think now we're kind of getting used to the idea that, hey, they're going to be our overlords any day now. We should probably be nice to them. Right? Do you worry about that?
You know, I think it's the other way around, where people are starting to see robots firsthand. Again,
it's
over 100,000 deliveries.
It's not scary.
It's not scary. It's really delightful. We design robots for people.
That's neat.
And we want them to be happy with them.
I'm actually really amazed. I mean, he really is adorable. It's got a real personality. Hey, Colleen, I was just thinking, I got these Death Star plans. Could you just jam them in there, wedge them in there, and send them? I think somebody might want those.
Princess Leia. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Pretty important message.
Help me. Just remember, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. There it is. Help me. It doesn't. Jam it. Push it. There. Yeah.
Probably don't recommend that at home for you other Relay owners.
Did you grow up watching science fiction and robot science fiction?
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's supposed to be kind of cool. This is your job.
Oh, yeah. It's a dream come true.
That is awesome.
It's the best job ever.
Yeah. That is so awesome. Jason Ransom, he is the... I'm sorry, that was Jason Ransom on the screen. You're Adrian Canoso.
That's right.
I'm sorry, I should get your name right. You're standing right next to me.
Jason's a good name, too.
And you're in charge of design of these things.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah, my core discipline is industrial design.
That's really... Well, nice job.
Thanks.
Nice job. Do they have to hand build those, or can you have them build?
No, we're in full production now.
Oh, neat. Oh, that's really neat. Yep. We are going to climb aboard the bridge of a starship. Captain, oh my captain.
That was me. I was the captain. We were on the Aegis, not the Enterprise, but we did unlock the Enterprise later in gameplay. But the gameplay you're about to see is us on the Aegis and Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Could be.
Super fun game.
Could be the VR game of the year, the one that really unlocks VR for a lot of people. You can play it on Vive. You can play it on Oculus. We're going to play it on the Sony PlayStation VR in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, Upside.com. I know you all saw William Shatner pitching Priceline, right?
Yep.
He's the price chopper or whatever. The guy who hired William Shatner is Jay Walker, one of the smartest guys in the travel industry. He created Priceline many years ago, sold the company. You know, as is often the case, I think he was told, okay, you can't compete with us for some years. But that non-compete ran out, and Jay has started a new company. And like all good entrepreneurs, he's looking for a place where the internet could make something better. And it turns out business travel is exactly the right place. That's why he created Upside.com. If you work for a big company, you know, I bet you when you worked for the Wall Street Journal, if you had business travel,
it was
called the travel.
It was a pain.
You didn't have a travel department?
No, we have a travel department. They refer you to the website. The website stunk.
Oh, that's terrible. At Ziff Davis, we would just call somebody.
It sucked.
They'd book us. It'd be awesome. But a smaller business, and maybe even the Wall Street Journal, they don't have something like that. Upside is a solution. What's great about Upside is they have, just like your big corporate travel department, pre-negotiated deals with airlines and hotels. So, and when you go there, you're going to say where you want to go. They're going to get you both the flight and the hotel pre-negotiated. They only show you the first six results. You can see more if you want to, but their idea is make this easy, make this simple. It's not like Priceline in the sense that you get to see what airline, what the schedule is, what the hotel is. There's no mystery here. You're going to book it, and then an amazing thing is going to happen. Your company is going to get a great deal on travel, and you're going to get a gift card of $100, $200, maybe even $300 or more on overseas trips. Within 72 hours, you get an email with a gift card. And these are not cheesy gift cards. This is for, they have gift cards for 50 big retailers. Amazon's one, Target, Nordstrom. So you're going to get a really valuable kind of thank you. Your business wins and you win. And by the way, if when I do it, of course, it's my business, you can apply the gift card right away to the flight or to the travel. So it immediately reduces. In my case, we went, we did some travel at $300 off right off the top, in addition to the already low price. I really love this. Jay has done a great job. This is called Upside, upside.com. And, of course, as with all our advertisers, we've got a deal for you. If you go there and you try it and you book a business travel there, we're going to guarantee at least a $100 gift card if you use the promo code NSS. That's like cash in your pocket. Just use the promo code NSS at upside.com for a guaranteed minimum $100. You may get more. Save big on travel and get a big gift card every trip. Minimum purchase required. See site for complete details. It's upside.com. It is really awesome. All right. I'm ready to play a game. You hadn't played this before.
No, this was what you're about to see. The footage is my very first time playing Star Trek Bridge Crew. We set up four PlayStation 4s
with
their own
setup.
VR headsets.
Crazy.
Right here in the studio, and it was a total blast. You know, starting out, it was a little wonky. That you go through a tutorial, you're like, okay, I'm hitting some menus, I'm hitting some buttons. Is this going to be fun or not, right? But when you watch Star Trek, you see everybody on the bridge, you see the crew.
You're on the bridge!
And then you're doing that in the game.
And now, by the way,
once it gets going, it's so much fun.
You can all play together, but more likely, because most people don't have four PlayStations, you're going to be playing against other people online, real people, right?
Yeah, so if your friends also have the game and a PlayStation or,
so awesome.
Or even cross-platform play, so someone's on an Oculus or whatever, you can play with them. Or you can, of course, find people you don't know, random folks or whatever, to play online. And there's already a lot of people playing this game.
I bet.
And in fact, Jason Howell popped into someone else's game for a little bit and played with them for a bit.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did. And again, like, you're sitting in a chair, but when you're there with your friends and you run into a Klingon starship, like, they're fun problems to solve.
Let's take a look.
Jason, what's up? Please charge our warp coils. I'd like to get to Mount Kev sometime this century.
Okay. Too much power.
How did you get out of the academy?
configure for impulse warp travel. Oh, wait a minute. I think... charge coils. That's
coils
what I'm talking
charging.
About.
Everybody stand down. I got this.
Permission for warp, Captain?
Permission granted.
Engage it.
Engage us to Mall Kev.
I think.
Okay, is that what...
There you go.
Oh, warp you do that. Engaging.
Okay.
Ooh.
All right.
I feel like we're moving fast.
Action
punch
completed.
It.
All right.
Showing
all
their sensors. We've got
hostiles
inbound.
Oh, dear God.
You need immediate support.
All right, we're under attack here, folks.
All right. Let's not get too hasty with our decisions.
Performing evasive maneuvers.
Engineer Jason, can you...
What do I do?
Charge our photon phasers.
Okay.
Should I put our shields up?
Yes.
Shields up.
Megan. All right, we see D5 Cruiser Alpha 1. That's the guy I think we want to blow up.
Awesome. Okay.
There's also one called Suribachi. It sounds a lot like Sriracha and Hibachi.
Our torpedoes are disarmed. Shall I arm them?
Oh, yeah. Arm our torpedoes.
Immediately.
Torpedoes armed.
Okay. Torpedoes are arming. I have phaser range at full capacity. All right. I don't know if that means anything.
Let's eliminate this enemy force.
Good work, Aegis. Thanks for the help.
Ooh, destroyed.
Maybe that'll teach them not to shoot at us anymore.
Yeah. We
Good
saved
job.
The Suribachi.
Did we do something?
Yeah, we just destroyed D5 Cruiser 1.
We saved the Suribachi.
Obviously.
All right, should I unarm our torpedoes?
No, we need to help out the USS Raleigh.
Hang in there.
Information, Captain. Pushing it to your panel.
All right, we need to travel to Mall Kev 2.
No
Lieutenant Brian, can you warp us over there?
Roger that.
You can see more of your body if you turn around.
Stop checking yourself out.
Looks like you're smelling your armpits or trying to dab. You can't tell what it is.
I'm just looking at. I have really nice legs. In VR.
Permission to engage, sir?
Engage.
Engage.
Okay, engine's locked for impulse.
Impulse destination.
Detecting
we're almost
planetary
there.
Debris, sir.
Oh, dear. God.
Fire. I could use more power if we want to go a little faster.
Power on engine power?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm new here.
All right, engine power to maximum. All right.
Hostile missile inbound.
They're right in front of us.
All right, shields up.
Shields up.
Red alert. That's you, Megan.
Prepare for impact.
Shields up, 100%.
Good. All right. That's what I like to hear.
Hull integrity, 10%.
Damn, we're always getting their butts kicked. We need to save them, guys.
Okay.
That sound very okay. Confident.
Red alert.
Uh-oh. I was checking out your boots. They're nice, Nate.
Megan, please focus on the mission in hand and
oh,
not my fashion.
Nice. Where'd you get those boots?
We're all wearing uniforms. Oh, the same thing.
Yeah, but yours look a little newer than mine. Are we flying towards a rock?
Yeah, maybe.
Oh.
The ship's built like a steakhouse, but she steers like a bistro.
Well, we need to throw some kebabs about 3.5 clicks away at that enemy starship.
Some of us have like, watched more Star Trek. Yes,
yes. I don't think kebabs is a Star Trek thing.
Can we fire steakhouse on
that? Yeah, let's fire on that warbird.
Torpedoes are armed.
Ooh. Shields collapse.
Shield strength.
We're taking massive damage.
Uh-oh. Massive. I set phasers to burst.
I put them up to maximum.
Our hull's down to 82%. There you go. There's a torpedo.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
Warp damage.
Yeah, let's do it again. Was that you, Brian?
No.
No, that's me. That's me.
Oh, Megan. All right.
Warp damage. I'm going to see if I can fix something.
Uh-huh.
I'm performing evasive maneuvers at the moment.
Ooh.
You've
been hit.
Uh-oh. Oh, my controls.
Hull's down to 72%.
Oh, no. I need to repair more things.
Warp word is getting away. We're down to 33% on our hull.
There's fire on the deck.
Go away, fire.
Somebody what? Put that out. We should evacuate the ship, sir.
What?
Captain always goes down with the ship. Uh-huh. Going down, and so are you.
Oh,
no!
Oh, blown up into... That looks like hella fun.
It was so much fun.
Wait a minute, let's do this, ready? Okay. Oh, 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 oh!
Well, that was actually one of the missions where we all died, but we had We had some successful missions too. I don't want you to think we're all bad at this.
Now
that
I noticed
first go.
As captain,
go.
You're using the controller,
well,
not the move.
That was just a choice. You can use either the move motion controllers, or you can use a regular controller. It's better with the motion controllers because if you have the regular controller, you're moving your arms with the joystick, so it's a little bit more juddery, and then you use the trigger to like actually touch stuff. So it's a little bit like more of a marionette or whatever. It's more natural with the move controllers.
Apparently Ubisoft lets you play people using Vive and Oculus too, right?
Yeah, so we haven't tested that out. We just played it all on
PlayStation. I wonder who would have an advantage.
Yeah, well, I got to say, with Oculus Touch, there's a little bit more finger recognition than with Move, which is basically both Move and Vive, you have this wand that senses where your hands are at, and then you press buttons to get your hands to do things. But where Oculus Touch can actually recognize what some of your fingers are doing. I don't know if the game is developed finely for that specific thing, because I only tried it on PlayStation.
What fun.
But it was a blast on PlayStation. I feel like it's going to be a blast on any platform.
I feel like this might sell a lot of PlayStation VR, I have to say.
But it's, you know, it's really one of those games where if you're playing with the right people, you're playing with your friends, you're going to stumble through some stuff. You're going to make some mistakes, and that's kind of part of the fun.
All games are like that. You suck at it until you get good at it.
Yeah, but we actually did.
I think you guys needed some training. You really weren't very spit and polish. You know, you need to not look at the boots. You got to focus. on the task at hand, yeah. Megan.
But we did get pretty good at it, and then we were able to unlock the Enterprise eventually. Oh, man, so it's a great game.
You got to talk to one of the people from the company that does this, Red Storm Entertainment.
Yeah, David Votipka, who's the creative director over there at Red Storm. They developed this game, about 85%, he said, and they worked with Ubisoft in Barcelona to fill off the rest. But they're actually known for making some of the Tom Clancy Rainbow Six games, so they really understand how to do licensed games, and I think they did a great job with Star Trek, and I got to speak with them a little bit on Skype.
Well, David, thanks for taking the time to speak with us here. So Star Trek, of course, is a massive universe, and there's lots of different timelines and scenarios. How did you all decide which version of Star Trek that this game should take place in? I mean, there's the original TV series, there's the Next Generation, and of course, there are the new films.
Yeah, it's a good question. So that was obviously very early on we were thinking about that. And one of the things about the new films that we initially set the game in is that they're the most recent version of Star Trek. So we wanted to, you know, they've brought in new fans. They've, you know, perhaps alienated some of the older fans. But because it's the current Star Trek, it's what's in everybody's mind. So we felt like that was a good place to hook into that was one reason. Another reason is that the technology on the bridge there with all the touch screens and so on was a great playground for us, especially with hand tracking and VR. And, you know, you can actually reach out with your hands and interact with the panels, just like you see the actors do in the shows. But it allowed us from a UI and usability and UX standpoint to do a lot there as well. So sort of the high-tech touchscreen nature was very cool. And then later on, we picked the original bridge. Well, actually, that was pretty early on, too, because one of the reasons is it was Star Trek's 50th anniversary recently. So, we wanted to include a classic Trek for that, and then also a classic Trek for all the classic Trek fans, right? We didn't feel like the game would be complete if we did the new universe without doing something from the old universe. TNG is like, it's requested in like every user comment of every article that we've ever put out and so on. You know, it's probably the most popular Trek, and we love TNG, and it'd be cool to do something with that in the future.
Awesome. Well, it definitely seems like there's a lot of room for future games and additions, but with this one, I was pretty intrigued by the gameplay. It was most fun to me when I was actually playing with other friends and people I knew, and, you know, we were in tense situations, and sometimes we made mistakes and we could kind of laugh at each other, and we were kind of barking commands and orders at one another, and kind of sometimes clumsily finding our way through the game. But when we really did hit a stride and we were actually able to execute and complete missions successfully, there was also a nice little feeling of accomplishment there too. So,
right.
You know, it's an interesting, different style of gameplay because it keeps you seated. But if you're playing with the right people, it can actually be pretty fun. But take me through the kind of idea, like, who is this game built for, and you know, what do you want people to get out of it?
Yeah. So before we started at VR Red Storm, we started late 2014, kind of exploring. We've been working on deepening online interactions, social interactions between players, which was actually a pretty tough challenge because you're still separated by that screen, right? So when we took one of those prototypes and we got our first DK2 dev kits and we tried it in VR, and me and Brian Tate, the game director, were sitting across the table in VR together, and you just see like the person's head moving, and then they turn and they look at you, and then they say something, and your brain is like, wow, that's another person. That's not just an animated avatar. So it was really kind of a magical sort of light bulb moment. That's how powerful social VR could be. So we started thinking about different types of games that sort of harken back to what we'd been prototyping before, which kind of led to Werewolves Within. But we also started thinking about crew-based games, and what better crew-based brand, at least I can think of, is Star Trek, right? So one of the things we really wanted players to get out of the game, it kind of comes down to two things, really. One is being able to step inside the world of Star Trek more deeply than you ever have been able to before. So you can actually be on the bridge and at your station and doing the things and acting out just exactly what you would watch in the shows and the films, and so many people have grown up with that. But I think that's a pretty strong fantasy. You know, the big entertainment brands that have entertained people and they've really developed a relationship with, they want to interact with them more deeply, and VR lets us do that. And then the second part of VR was really allowing them to do that together. So that's why the game is named Bridge Crew, right? So it's all about doing that together with your crew. And that social presence that VR brings allows us to make a Star Trek Bridge Crew game that you know, technically could be made in a traditional format, but it just wouldn't nearly be the same. And when we first pitched it to CBS, one of the comments that sticks with me to today is they said, we've always wanted to make a bridge crew game like this, but the technology has never existed to do it properly before. So that was kind of the crux of what we wanted to accomplish.
Well, it seems like you did kind of pull off that feeling of actually sitting, you know, in the bridge, running a starship. It's a lot of missions where you're going to a place and you have to find somebody, you have to complete some sort of task, or you have to fend some people off and defend yourself, or even go into battle. But I gotta say, I was a little bummed that I couldn't get up and like walk around, and I couldn't go to different parts of a starship. It obviously is focused on the bridge, but I wanted to get out there and explore, you know, all the Enterprise and the Aegis have to offer. Of course, those might be different games later on down the road, but were there any technology limitations to adding that sort of stuff? Or did you really just want to make sure that this was a focused experience specifically on the bridge?
I think a couple of things, like in the early days of VR, when the market is still growing, you can only make a game that costs so much and that's so big. So what are you going to focus on? And really, when you think of the heart of what Star Trek is, in so many ways, it's about the relationships of those people on the bridge and everything that they go through together and interacting with each other. You know, if we would have just allowed you to tour the bridge, well, that would have been additional scope and cost, but it's not really spaceship tour either, right? It's about like the gameplay and social side of the bridge crew interaction. So don't get me wrong, I'd love to go down in engineering and start turning wrenches and pulling dilithium crystals and stuff like that, right? So maybe in the future, because there's just such a huge universe that, you know, some of the critiques that come out is like about what's not there.
Yeah.
There's no Enterprise D, or there's, you know, no this or no that. And it's like, we would love to do all that, but, you know, it's got to be a sort of one step at a time.
You know, away team wouldn't be all that much fun. Really? You know,
I think it depends. If you have a cool plan to go on.
What is that, Captain?
That could be cool.
I should check him for alien infestations. Hold on a second. Let me just run the tricorder scan on Nathan.
How's
we're
going
to talk to somebody who's invented and just won a big $2.6 million prize for creating an actual tricorder. Oh, my God.
Is it
he's
as big
dead.
As this? Is it as big as that?
I think it's better. But
better.
First, Georgia Dow will show you why it's so important that you teach your kids to code. Shh.
Hi, I'm Georgia from iMore.com. And right now I'm going to be talking about teaching your children how to code. So, if you're like me, you know that coding is one of the languages of the future. And I think that it's really important to start your children as young as possible. I think that coding is going to be one of those essential classes that are going to be in our school systems, but you may want to start much earlier. So, what you want to do is give your kids something fun and enjoyable to do so that they learn this language, and if possible, maybe 5 to 10 minutes a day. It doesn't take that long, but once you practice, you feel comfortable with it. So there's a few different ways that you can teach your children to code in a fun way, because if they're learning something that's fun, they're going to keep at it. One of the ways is Swift Playgrounds. Swift Playgrounds is great. You have a cute little tiny character named Byte that you teach to code and end up playing a small game where you have them going through a system to be able to pick up gems and get to the end of the pathway. Another great way is Bitsbox. Bitsbox is really cool. They send you this neat box that has all kinds of cards and toys in it, and then what your children do is they take their own computer and copy out the code. There's also Kano, which is a really fun way for your kids to be able to learn how to code and feel comfortable with it. If you make it fun, it's not really school, it's just learning. And if you like this, you can check me out on Twitter at Georgia_Dow.
Love Georgia Dow. Thank you, Georgia Dow. Actually, one of our studio audience members, Chris, here, teaches high schoolers to code in Australia.
Cool. Very cool.
Adelaide, right? And he tells me his school is a Python school. They use iPads, but they use Pythonista, which is a really neat Python. And then he's able to make apps. How many apps? You said 10 apps so far?
I want 10 this year. We have 7 so far.
7 so far, 10 wow. more this year. He's up here for WWDC.
So cool. So
isn't that
cool.
neat?
Yeah.
So it really is possible. I mean, and how exciting to have kids, for a kid to be able to create an app instead of just using an app, to be actually able to make an app. That's great. We were playing around with our tricorder here. This is kind of one of the, in some ways, the holy grail, right, of medicine, the idea that a machine could just diagnose.
It's an iconic idea from Star Trek. You have this one thing that can diagnose you, help prepare you, kind of figure you all out quickly.
Yeah.
And that idea is so strong in pop culture, it's kind of become a holy grail for medicine, really.
Well, guess what? On the line with us right now, Dr. Basil Harris of Basil Leaf Technologies. He won, his team won, a $2.6 million X Prize for creating Dexter, which is it a tricorder, Basil?
It is. It's a tricorder. And thanks for having me on the
thanks
show.
Thanks for being on here. I appreciate
show.
It. Yeah. I see Sulu behind you.
Right.
So this X Prize was put on by Qualcomm.
That's right. Qualcomm Foundation in conjunction with XPRIZE Foundation came up with this competition. And there were over 300 teams from all around the world competing to build the first generation tricorder. And they were tested at UCSD. And we were fortunate enough to come out on top. And it's been an awesome experience.
What was the actual assignment?
So the actual assignment is, it's a little bit more than the tricorder that you have, the prop tricorder that you have there.
Yes. Thank you for telling us it's a prop.
yours is more capable than this, is what you're saying.
Well, that one, it was in the hands of Dr. McCoy.
Right.
So it would give readouts to Dr. McCoy.
Right.
But it was still up to the ship's doctor to interpret those vital signs and those readings to come up with the determination. Mm-hmm. He had to say, oh, he's dead, Jim. You know, he had to be able to make that decision.
Right.
And so XPRIZE, they are always trying to make things as difficult as possible. And they said that's not enough to come up with the cool technology. Let's have the teams actually code the physician into the tricorder as well.
Wow. Now, are you a physician, Dr. Harris?
Yes, I'm an ER doctor over out in Philadelphia with a background in engineering before I went into medicine.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a great opportunity to try and marry the two.
And were you a Star Trek fan?
Absolutely. I did miss the initial running of the original series by about a decade.
A little too young, yeah.
Yeah.
I was stunned to learn it's 50 years old.
Yeah,
I was a kid when that came out. That's pretty amazing.
As you said, as old as Sergeant Pepper's.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
So was this something that you had started before the XPRIZE, or was it just the XPRIZE that got you going on this?
It was the XPRIZE that got me going. Otherwise, I'd still – I'm still a full-time ER doctor, and that's where I'd be.
That's a full-time job. That's a busy job.
It is.
So did you work on this with your brother? Was it just you? What was your team?
So I came up with the idea to enter this competition, and I pulled on all the resources, the only people that would listen to me, and that's basically my family and some close friends.
I'm going to build a tricorder.
Let's do it. How hard could it possibly be, really? So... we worked on it for it was a 5-year mission, just like the show, and we were very fortunate.
Wait a minute, it took you 5 years to do this?
Yep.
Wow.
So
it's
been great. It's we learned a lot along the way. Went down a lot of false passageways and in iterations, but persevered with it to build our kit.
Now, so there's got to be. Tell me about the parts. I mean, is there something that physically reads the patient?
Yeah, so it's a little different than the magic box from the show. It's a medical kit, and so there are several components of hardware. But the key difference between this and the tricorder on the show is that it is used directly by the consumer. So
there's a sphygmomanometer. He's going to measure his blood pressure, I guess, right?
Right,
yeah.
And there's a bunch of components where the user is taught to interact with through the iPad.
So you measure pulse, it looks like, as well.
Yep, you're getting all the vital signs, blood pressure, heart rate, heart rhythm.
You have a little EKG device in there too?
There's a little chest monitor that goes on you. So it's not exactly like This is the first generation tricorder, so it does have to make contact with your skin.
This kind of makes, to be honest, makes a little more sense that you'd, and not a hard thing to do. I can imagine a patient, doing this if he, if you had a little maybe a fibrillation or you felt, you're some symptomatic. What is he doing? Is that his temperature? What is he rubbing on his forehead there?
So that was getting a temperature reading across the forehead.
Okay, and then he's blowing into something? Is that to see if he's drunk?
No, that's actually measuring his lung function to see if he has a restrictive lung disease like COPD.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you put all of those data points together, then what happens?
Well, then you synthesize all this objective data. You use these devices like this, and it's you're getting objective information like breath sounds, analyzing that.
Oh, it's actually listening to your breath as well.
It's listening to see if you have wheezing, if you have any fluid in your lungs.
My doctor does that, right?
Yeah. And it puts you through a very thorough examination, and it comes up with a determination on whether you have one of the conditions that we were looking for in the competition.
You know, I recently got a terrible flu when I was visiting my son, and my family called the ambulance. I was out of it. I woke up, there's six guys in the room looking at me, and they did those measurements. Actually, they didn't do all of them, but they did many of those measurements. They took my blood sugar too. You might want to do that if somebody's a diabetic, right? But you don't have an invasive blood sugar test.
No, actually, ours has a non-invasive monitor that can get your blood sugar without drawing any blood.
Wow.
As well as your hemoglobin level and your white cell count.
Oh, you get a lot of information.
So it's really kind of cool.
That's really cool. I could see an EMT team, an ambulance rescue squad having this in there. And now tell me about is it AI that's then looking at all this data?
So there's a mixture of some AI, some traditional AI, some machine learning for different components, like analyzing the breath sounds and getting the chunks of data that we need analyzed. And then it is put all together and synthesized to come up with a final diagnosis. It does exactly what I do in the ER every day.
Yeah.
And that's basically how we modeled it initially. Patients are coming in, it's not all trauma and blood and guts in the ER. Most people that come there are coming for regular conditions. And so I have to see what their symptoms are, mm-hmm. order a bunch of tests, put it together, and come up with a diagnosis. And that's basically what Dexter does.
Can it write prescriptions?
Yeah, and then you can have an Amazon drone drop it off.
Yeah.
What's the vision for this? Do you see people buying this and having this in their home so that they'll use it before going into the ER or before going into urgent care? Or do you see this more as something that can help the doctor in the moment?
Yeah, so this was, the XPRIZE competition, a Qualcomm Tricorder XPRIZE, it was a very cool idea to have everything completely autonomous, but this is not intended to replace your physician or your medical provider. When this comes out on the market, it's going to be something that's going to really help make their job more efficient. Now, imagine if you are the physician and you're caring for, let's say, 1,000 patients, and you get a call in the middle of the night. Even if it's a video call, you can only get so much information, over that video call. Imagine if you had the patient on the other side had the tricorder kit, and you're able to see a reliable stream of vital signs, objective information, their glucose, their hemoglobin, their white count. You're getting that information. It helps make that interaction a lot deeper, and you can come up with a better decision. Rather than sending everyone to the ER, which is what I end up seeing.
Yeah. Here's a picture of you on the stage receiving a check for $2.5 million.
What's that money going to go towards?
Yeah.
Is that towards bringing this to market, or are you just going to be able to
get
take a
nice
vacation,
boat.
Or what?
Get a really nice boat.
No, it's helping us get to the next step. And so getting this stuff through the FDA approvals, getting the clinical trials.
Oh, so you're going ahead with this. That's awesome.
Absolutely. So the XPRIZE was almost the easy part. And, getting the FDA trial and the FDA approvals is a bigger challenge in some respects. But we're marching through with each component. with our non-invasive glucose monitor, with our digital stethoscope, all those things, each component has to get its own clinical trial
right.
and its own approvals.
Right. And those can take more than a year. I mean, they can take quite a while.
Right. We're hoping within the year to have our first ones completed and approved.
Yeah.
So.
This is really exciting. It's just the beginning. It's the final frontier. It's just the beginning of of all of this because, I mean, I know, well, Vic Gundotra's company, AliveCor, has the AFib detector.
Cool stuff.
And that's got FDA approval. I think we're going to start to see more and more of this. There's rumors that Apple's got some sort of non-invasive blood sugar monitor. We're going to see more and more of this. And I think this is a very exciting frontier. And you must be really excited to be part of this. I remember reading about this when they announced this XPRIZE. I thought, no one's going to make a tricorder. That's insane. And here it is.
It's very exciting. I'm very optimistic for the future.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think a lot of this comes, you have to give Apple a little bit of credit because if it weren't for the smartphone, that's what's empowering a lot of this stuff. You've got a very powerful computer, very inexpensively.
Absolutely.
I saw it looked like you were using an iPad. Is that what it works with or does it?
Right. The interface is on an iPad mini and it really has enough computing power do all the analysis that's needed.
Truly so
it's
remarkable.
It's something that can be operated completely off grid.
Dr. Harris, I could just congratulations. Well done. What an exciting time this must be for you. Are you going to keep your job and work on this in the evenings or are you going to go full?
I'm still trying to figure that part out.
Yeah. That's exciting. That's great. Well, so thank you so much from Basil Leaf Technologies, Dr. Basil Harris. Dexter is a tricorder. In fact, it does some things that this prop tricorder just it can't do anything, actually.
That makes some cool sounds, though.
How do you do the non-invasive? I'm very interested in the non-invasive blood sugar monitoring. I've heard that there's sandpaper devices that can. Is it like that? How does it do that?
Nope. It's not abrading your skin at all. It's strictly optical methods.
Oh, so big breakthrough. That alone, you can sell that to Apple for a couple of $1 billion. That's big. That's really exciting. Have you had investors? Have investors and companies approached you?
They have. We're still kept very private, and we're funding everything ourselves.
Good for you.
And with the XPRIZE win, obviously. Is
you
helping us to push this forward.
Yeah.
One more question. Is it just iPad or is it iPhone and Android devices or even Windows devices too?
Yeah, absolutely. It's open platform. So we can use any of those. They all have the same, as long as you have Bluetooth and we are moving to use full Wi-Fi on the devices pair with the, so we can get better bandwidth.
Right. Gray Raven in our chat room wants to know, does it understand Vulcan physiology or is it just humans?
Strictly human
for
now.
Okay. That green blood really throws it.
Yeah. Hey, maybe for version 2, right?
Dr. Harris, thank you so much for taking time with us. I really appreciate it and it's very exciting. Congratulations on your win.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Dr. Basil Harris, Basil Leaf Technologies, Dexter.
So cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
I'm blown away.
Yeah.
We're going to get some questions answered in the mailbag in just a second. And Father Robert and Brian had a fun project on know-how we'll talk about.
Very cool. Yeah,
I think you want this.
I think I do.
Yeah.
I think I do.
Our show today brought to you by WordPress. Did you know WordPress hosts 27% of all the websites in the world are running in WordPress? The other day I was looking at Quartz.com, the great publication. It's WordPress.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, this was a breakthrough publication, right? With a unique style and it's WordPress.
Every newsroom I've worked in, and I've worked in a few big ones, use WordPress.
It's kind of remarkable. And you know, I started my blog many, many years ago, and I tried a bunch of platforms. Quickly found WordPress. Stayed with WordPress. Ran a WordPress blog for 10 years. But I was self-hosting on my own server, and I'm so thrilled to be on WordPress.com now. They host it. It's very affordable. It's less expensive than having my own server, and it's a lot easier. I don't have to do any maintenance. They do all the security patches, all the upgrades automatically. There's somebody I can call any time of the day or night and ask for help. They've got these wonderful support people. I've asked them a number of simple, easy questions like, what template should I use? And they come right up with an answer. I love WordPress. You'll see my blog, WordPress, is leolaporte.com. In fact, I'm going to be using that on the road, posting pictures and so forth. I use my blog more than I ever did before because one other thing that's unique about WordPress.com is you have now a community. There's a front page. I have 500,000 people. This is my site. 500,000 people following me thanks to the WordPress.com community. And that's very, very exciting. I blog more than I have in years because it's so satisfying. It's so much fun. See why 27% of all the websites run on WordPress. Whether you're a business, an individual, you want to sell things, whatever it is you want to do, an entrepreneur, a freelancer, WordPress has a plan that's right for you. And it's just a lot of fun. WordPress, as little as a couple of bucks a month. WordPress.com/NSS. WordPress.com, and actually we're going to make it even more affordable. If you go to that site, you're going to get 15% off your new plan purchase. 15% off WordPress.com/NSS. I'm really happy to be back on WordPress. I feel like I grew up blogging on WordPress, and I just love it so much. Hey, did you try to buy one of those NES classics?
I know when it first came out, I did try to buy it, but I still have my Wii U, and basically all the games that were on the NES classic I still have on my Wii U. So after not being able to get it in stores, after not being able to get it on Amazon or Best Buy, I kind of gave up. And I was thinking, okay, in a few months I'll be able to go and get one.
I wonder if...
And then they stopped making them.
They discontinued it. And I wonder if the plan is maybe to put it on the Switch or something like that.
I sure hope so. I'd love to see Nintendo come out with like a NES edition of the Switch. Give me some cool color Joy-Cons. Throw on all those old games. Because here's the thing. Nintendo has sold me, you know, the original Mario games, and I, like a sucker, I just keep buying them and buying them and buying them. Yeah. But with the Switch, they say that your game purchases going forward will carry over between systems. So it's a different promise. All the more reason for a Switch version. But they haven't done that either yet.
Right.
So if I can't buy an NES Classic, if I don't have a Wii U loaded up, and they're not available on Switch, what do I do?
Leo? Build your own, right? That's what Brian Burnett did on Know How. Watch.
Why spend an exorbitant amount of money to buy an NES Classic when you can build your own? The Raspberry Pi 3 is a great retro machine capable of playing games from systems as old as the NES all the way to the N64. As far as hardware for this project, obviously you're going to need a Raspberry Pi. I recommend the version 3 with its 1.2 GHz quad-core processor and 1 GB of memory, which makes the Pi finally capable of not just playing 2D side-scrolling games, but now has enough horsepower to play games from the first PlayStation and N64 era. Next, you'll need a micro SD card with at least 8 GB or higher, a USB drive, and a power supply capable of 5 volts with 2.5 amps. Anything less and the Pi won't have enough juice to play demanding games. You'll also need a controller. USB replicas of the SNES controllers go for about $14 for a pair on Amazon. For software, make your way to the RetroPie website at retropie.org.uk. There you'll find an image of the RetroPie needed for this project. Once downloaded, extract the file, and if you're a Windows user like me, download the Win32 disk imager to install the image to your micro SD card. Mac users can download Apple Pie Baker, and if you're an ultra-elite Linux user, well, I don't need to explain any of this to you. Once the image is finished writing, place the micro SD card into the Raspberry Pi. Hook up all necessary cables and boot up for the first time. You'll be greeted by a welcome screen for setting up your controller. Follow the mapping instructions, and once finished, you'll be at the RetroPie options menu. Now it's time to transfer ROMs to a USB drive. ROMs are digital versions of game cartridges and are copyrighted, so they are not included with the Raspberry Pi. But fortunately, I found some laying around in an old folder of mine. Format the USB drive and create a folder called RetroPie. Then plug it into the Pi and wait for it to stop blinking. Remove the drive and place it back into the computer. You'll now see folders and a ROM folder that has a subfolder for each emulator included. Move ROMs you have in their respective folders and plug the USB back into the Pi. Once again, wait for it to stop blinking and restart Emulation Station for it to recognize the freshly downloaded ROMs. You should now see emulators pop up with the games listed. To make the menu system a little more slick, we'll need the collective help of the internet. Go to the RetroPie options menu and select Wi-Fi. Enter your password and connect to your network. Then back out to the main menu and select Scraper. From there, you'll be able to fetch game descriptions and cover art. Now it's time to sit back and play some of your favorite games from the last 30 years on the big screen. PlayStation games like Final Fantasy VII and N64 games like Mario Kart run flawlessly. GoldenEye has some stuttering, but that could be fixed with some overclocking. If you want to go wireless, you can use a Bluetooth controller. In my case, the new Nintendo Switch Pro controller syncs easily to the Pi 3. The only thing left to do now is to find a case. This has been Brian Burnett from Know How, showing you how to build your own Raspberry Pi retro game machine.
Wait a minute. Did he put that in a Switch?
No, he didn't put it in a Switch. But I got to say,
that'd be a good case. Just take the guts out of the Switch.
That would be pretty awesome. In some ways, what Brian did there is even more useful and cooler than the NES Classic, because he had PlayStation games, Nintendo 64 games, all sorts of stuff. And look, here comes our mail. Look at that.
Oh, my God. It's
right to you.
It's right to you. How cute are you? It's time for our mailbag. Oh, he still has the Death Star plans. That's a good thing. I'll leave those in there in case Princess Leia shows up. All set. Thank you.
It said you've got mail.
It said, Leo, you've got mail.
That's awesome.
Oh, see you later. I'm heading home. That is the cutest little thing ever.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Autonomous, right? I mean,
it's doing its own.
It's not by a remote control? Wow. All right, take your pick.
You've got mail. You've got mail. I'll take the
okay.
Did you want me to get
sticky?
That one?
No, I don't care. I'll start with Tom Terrific, okay? Tom writes, as a Security Now listener, whenever I... this is the strangest first sentence I've ever heard of. Whenever I go... as a Security Now listener, whenever I go to my doctor's office... And see his computer looking at me with an open USB port. Oh, I cringe. How can this be safe? Admittedly, I'm not a bad guy, but this seems like an easy way for a bad guy to get into a network while he's waiting for the doctor to show up in the room. Keep up the great show. And he even sent us a picture of the computer. Is it unattended?
Yeah, it looks like that's in the actual doctor's office, and I guess that would be the computer the doctor uses while he's checking up on you.
Oh, so he's waiting for...
Exactly, he's waiting for a doctor.
Okay.
It's tough. I mean,
what we don't know, and Tom, you may not know, is maybe that computer is locked down. Those USB ports aren't necessarily active just because you see them on the case.
Yeah.
They may have physically disconnected them, or they may have locked them out. But you're absolutely right. An open USB port is a recipe for disaster because we know this. In fact, it happens sometimes at public libraries, and I've seen exploits. I've seen proof of concept where you could put a code on a USB key, put it into a port. Because of auto run on Windows, a program will run, and in about 30 seconds, you can remove it from the port, walk away, and come back a week or two or 10 weeks or a month later, put that USB key in, it checks and says, the software's already installed, so there must be a log of all the keystrokes on this computer, and pull it right out. That would be one way.
Yeah.
There's lots of ways, of course. You could put WannaCry on it.
It's a vulnerability, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I've seen businesses actually put super glue in USB ports. I don't recommend.
I think if he's concerned about it, he should talk with his doctor. He should just say, hey, listen, I don't know if you know, but this is an area that you might be leaving yourself vulnerable, and here's what you might want to do about it.
At least ask him about it.
Yeah, it's not something a lot of people think about, because when you buy a computer, there are USB ports. They're always open and exposed. Why would that be a problem if that's how computers come? And so it just might be a nice way to kind of tip off your doctor and see what they're up to.
Yeah, and I don't know, but I would guess that it would probably be a HIPAA violation, because the federal law protects you and your privacy, especially your medical records. So you should mention it. Now, it looked like he works for a group. Mm-hmm. It looked like there was specialized software with a login.
Yeah, there were some logins. Yeah, that wasn't a normal Windows install.
It may be that... they've got an IT department and a smart IT guy who's protected him against that. Just because the port exists, goodness knows, I got plenty of devices from my cable company with USB ports that don't do anything at all.
Yeah,
But good question, Tom.
Yeah, great question. Well, here's another one from Jason. He says, hey, Leo, on MacBreak Weekly, you mentioned using a Synology as a personal cloud device.
Yeah.
I actually do this for my family, and we keep all of our photos on it.
Yeah.
However, this prevents me from using Apple Photos. How can I use Synology as my personal cloud and use Apple Photos? Thanks for the help, Jason. And that's a pretty good question. Apple Photos is the default Photos app that if you have an iPhone or an iPad or a Mac, basically...
It's kind of automatic.
Yeah, right? It'll store your photos there. Now, there are, of course, lots of different ways to handle this. And I think maybe the best way to do it, if he's using a Mac, I think you can actually set it up so that your default, your photos get stored on your Synology device. You're going to have to put them there manually yourself. And then that can back up to iCloud, which will then show them in your Photos app.
Yeah.
Right?
So Synology has, it's a wonderful, by the way.
Because it's basically just like network storage.
Yeah, but it has the DSM on it, the Synology Disk Manager. It has a lot of apps. It has a Photos app, which is a photo sharing app, kind of sort of like Apple Photos, but it's not Apple's Photos. It's a little different. A couple of things you can do. For one thing, the Synology does have backup capability, you can point to the contents of your Photos folder. So Photos, just like iPhotos before it, creates what looks like a file that is your photos, the library, they call it, the Photos library. It's actually not a file. It's a folder. Apple has this very sneaky and I think nice capability of bundling a lot of files together into what looks like a single file. But if you right-click on it and you say Show Package Contents, you'll realize that it's actually a folder, and inside there are other folders.
All your stuff's already in there.
Your original photos are in there as well. It depends on what version of the program you're using, but look for original photos or photos or originals. You'll see a folder inside there. You can actually tell the Synology, because it can see that folder, just back up that Photos folder, and you'll at least have a backup of it. And that will happen automatically. I think you could even have it ported then. I haven't tried this, but I would bet you can have it then ported into Synology's Photos. So in other words, you can use both. Use your Apple Photos. That's automatic. It's built in. iCloud can back it up. There's no reason not to have multiple copies. And the Synology can back it up and maybe even import it into the Photos.
That would be better than having Photos just point to Synology and then getting the files from there. Because
you don't want it to be too manual.
Well, you don't want it to be too manual. Plus, you have a backup. Right. So if, heaven forbid, something ever goes wrong
iPhotos,
Forbid, something ever goes wrong with the Synology network storage, then you have a backup. You have
you
a redundancy.
Three copies
you
of
have
everything.
That somewhere else. Yeah. So that's a good way to...
Sometimes people back up something and they copy it to like a Synology and then delete the original saying, well, it's backed up.
Yeah.
Then it's not a backup anymore. It's the original. Right?
Yeah.
So
you,
three copies. One original on your hard drive and then two copies. One could be Apple's Photos. One could be Synology.
Mm-hmm.
That would actually be a really great solution. You've got a cloud backup.
Yeah.
You've got a local backup, and you have the originals.
Yeah.
I actually use also Google Photos and Flickr and Amazon Photos. I back up my photos as many places as I can.
And do you do that just because...
I don't want to lose any photos.
Okay. And you kind of got to test out the newest stuff to be
able to... Well, but it's also free. Like Google Photos is free. It's easy. Yeah. Apple's Photos is not. You have to pay for cloud space.
Well, with Google Photos, you are helping their machine learning efforts, too, by feeding them photos, you're feeding them data.
I like
you're
that.
Helping that.
Actually, I love Google Photos just because I can type in somebody's name.
Yeah.
I can type in.
They have the best search.
It's amazing. I don't have to categorize photos anymore.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm going to be taking. I probably come back from my trip with. I would expect at least 3,000 photos.
And they'll narrow that down to for you. They'll say here are the couple hundred worth of solutions.
I am looking for solutions because that's a nightmare.
Anyway.
That was fun. Thank you for all the questions. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here. I love doing the show with Nathan. Nathan Oliveris-Giles is a regular on many of our shows. He's a fill-in for Jason Howell when Jason is away. He's a fill-in for Megan.
And for Megan. And Megan and I are going to be...
Monday.
Yeah.
You're getting up early.
We're going to be doing the play-by-play, color commentary, instant analysis of the WWDC, Apple's Developer Conference keynote on Monday morning.
I'll be on an airplane, but I will be trying... desperately to find out what they announced.
And then we'll be together on iOS Today as well, talking about some of our favorite apps.
You're filling in for me, I think, on a number of shows in the next 2 weeks because I'm going on vacation. I won't be here next week or the week after, but I'll be back in 3 weeks to host the new Screensavers. I am heading out to Peru and Ecuador. I'm going to go to Machu Picchu, the Incan ruins, up in the Andy cloud forest, and then down back to sea level to the Galapagos
Islands. Well, we better
see
some blog posts on your WordPress.
Well, there already is one. So I was debating what to do, and I set up a Google Photos album.
Yeah.
Because that'll be easy. Because my workflow is I take pictures with the camera, and then I can pair the camera to my phone, my Android phone, my Pixel, and it will automatically import the pictures into Photos.
Okay.
And then Photos, if I can get online, and I have a Google Fi card, so I'm hopeful I'll be able to get online, will upload, maybe it'll take a day or two, to upload those pictures. But then I have a secondary workflow I'm going to try. I'm bringing an iPad. This is insane. I'm bringing an iPad with me, and this is Microsoft's Sway. And Sway is a really interesting technology. And the reason I'm doing this is I cannot embed a Google Photos album,
but you can embed Sway in my work.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's nothing in there right now. It's just a kind of, but if you check back, I think if I add photos to my Sway, which I can do on my iPad on the road,
it'll just update that.
It will update that.
Interesting.
So I think that it will slowly become a slideshow in real time. Who knows?
One way to find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. And as I said, I'll have plenty of backups. I'm also bringing a little USB drive to back it up on. I'm bringing extra cards. I don't erase my cards. I just fill them up.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when I get through customs and they erase everything, then we'll be glad we have the Sway, right?
Yep. Good backups for your backups.
Backup for my backup. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you for
being
here,
pleasure.
Everybody. We do this show every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. That's 2200 UTC. If you want to stop by and watch live, we'd appreciate it. Had a great live audience from Ireland, from Australia, from the States. If you want to be in our live audience, just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. You might even be the person who announces the show at the beginning. There's the cold open.
Something to look forward
cool.
to. Yeah.
Thanks to our Irish visitor. What's your name? Kieran. I love his name. Kieran, who did that at the beginning of the show today. You did a good job, Kieran. And thanks to all of you for joining us. If you can't watch live, I understand. It's okay. On-demand versions are always available. twit.tv/NSS, our website. Or use your favorite podcast application and subscribe. That way you know this one. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.
Yay!